I worked in the Trump administration.
Never in a million years did I ever think that I'd be working in the White House with a president that didn't care about the American people.
He would suggest not giving disaster relief to states that hadn't voted for him.
I remember one time after a wildfire in California, he wouldn't send relief because it was a Democratic state. So we went as far as looking up how many votes he got in those impacted areas to show him, these are people who voted for you. This isn't normal. The job of the president is to protect Americans, regardless of politics.
If Trump's elected again, there'll be no one to stop his worst instincts. You'll have yes men help him implement Project 2025's agenda. Unchecked power, no guardrails.
They will be serving one man. I am voting for Kamala Harris because she will put the safety and security of every American first, whether they voted for her or not.
Well, that sounds like a good idea.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
It ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. To the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am.
From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the broadcast as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA. Also heard elsewhere in California, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Hawaii, Ohio, New York, Louisiana, New Mexico, New Hampshire, Arkansas, Washington State, West Virginia, regular Virginia, Wisconsin, and Minnesota, not to mention a whole bunch of internet streaming sites. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us for another all-too-thrilling edition of the Bradcast. Glad to have you here. Desi Doyen, I got to tell you, I am really worried about this one.
Yes, about Hurricane Milton, and yes, so am I. It looks like it's going to be a monster no matter what.
Florida authorities issued dire warnings on Tuesday to residents along the state's central Gulf Coast, which are now directly in Hurricane Milton's path, telling them, quote, time is running out to flee the potential historic storm that is set to make landfall on Wednesday night and or after midnight on Thursday. The storm was a Category 5 as of early on Tuesday morning. It then weakened slightly to Category 4. It is now back to a Category 5 as we go to air, but it is expected to weaken before landfall, even as it has grown in size as it sweeps across Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula and barrels toward Florida in what could be an historic landfall. Sarasota Mayor Liz Alpert said she's confident her constituents understand the consequences of not evacuating. She said, you have to evacuate. It is not survivable to survive a 10 to 15 foot storm surge. Tampa Mayor Jane Castor was even more blunt as her city, with its many inlets and canals, she said on Monday to CNN, quote, if you choose to stay in one of those evacuation areas, you're going to die. Well, that seems clear. So was the message on Tuesday afternoon from the National Weather Service, which, because Donald Trump is not currently president and therefore unable to keep his promise of privatizing the Weather Service, well, that is still free for all of us. This afternoon, their update was blunt when it comes to the potential impacts of wind, storm surge, rain, and even tornadoes in this storm. Potential impacts of wind from Hurricane Milton on the Tampa area, quote, are devastating to catastrophic. Take your pick. They warned to expect structural damage to sturdy buildings, some with complete roof and wall failures, complete destruction of mobile homes, damage greatly accentuated by large airborne projectiles, many of them thanks to rubble still on the streets from Hurricane Helene, which brushed Tampa on its way to landfall in Florida's Panhandle just over a week ago. Locations, they warn, may be uninhabitable for weeks or months. They warned to expect numerous large trees to snap or be uprooted, along with fences and roadway signs blown over, roads impassable from large debris, many bridges, causeways, and access routes impassable, widespread power and communications outages. The threat from the storm surge, potentially an unsurvivable 11 to 15 feet in some areas, is described as, quote, life-threatening and historic. Potential impacts from the storm surge, quote, are devastating to catastrophic. They warn of widespread deep inundation with storm surge flooding greatly accentuated by powerful battering waves, structural damage to buildings with many being washed away, damage greatly compounded from considerable floating debris. Locations may be uninhabitable, they say, for an extended period. Nearshore escape routes and secondary roads may be washed out or severely flooded. They say they're expecting extreme beach erosion. New shoreline cuts are possible. Well, that's just more beachfront property. Am I right, Donald Trump? Massive damage to marinas, docks, boardwalks, and piers. Small craft broken away from moorings with many lifted on shore and stranded. Flood watch is in effect as well, thanks to flooding rains. Peak rainfall amounts as high as 8 to 12 inches with locally higher amounts. Potential impacts from that, say it with me, are, quote, devastating to catastrophic as well. Rivers and tributaries may overwhelmingly overflow their banks in many places. With deep moving water, small streams, creeks, canals, and ditches may become raging rivers. Floodwaters can enter numerous structures within multiple communities, some structures becoming uninhabitable or washed away. Numerous places where floodwaters may cover escape routes, streets, and parking lots become rivers of raging water with underpasses submerged, driving conditions very dangerous, numerous road and bridge closures with some weakened or washed out. And just to make things more fun, the situation is also favorable for tornadoes with, quote, significant impact that I won't describe here, but I suspect you can imagine. Forecasters say Hurricane Milton has the potential to become one of the most destructive hurricanes on record for West Central Florida, which includes the Tampa area, which has not seen a direct hit from a major storm in more than 100 years, during which time its population and the density of its homes and businesses and other buildings has increased exponentially. That after, on Monday, like Hurricane Helene just 1 week earlier, Hurricane Milton underwent rapid intensification and strengthened from a Category 1 hurricane to a near record-breaking Category 5 hurricane with winds of 180 miles per hour, and it did it in less than 24 hours. Now, as noted, Milton has since weakened to a Category 4 hurricane, but it is expected to remain, quote, an extremely dangerous one through landfall along Florida's west coast. The National Hurricane Center, not yet privatized, warned on Tuesday, quote, Milton has the potential to be one of the most destructive hurricanes on record. Joining us now to discuss all of this is our friend climate guy, Guy Walton, a 30-year Weather Channel veteran based in Atlanta, Georgia, and for many years now a daily tracker of climate extremes at his website, guyonclimate.com, and he is also the author of the World of Thermo children's book series focused on our worsening climate crisis. Guy Walton, welcome back to the broadcast, sir.
Yes, thanks for having me, Brad. Although every time you have me, we have a terrible, horrendous weather situation going on across some portion of the country. Yeah. And I think it was last time it was heat.
Yeah,
and this time it's a powerful hurricane.
Well, when I think of bad news, I think of you, Guy Walton.
Thanks a lot.
before we get to Hurricane Milton, you just went through Hurricane Helene down in Georgia just over a week ago or so. I just need to ask, how did you and Atlanta fare that storm? As I suspect the Peach State may be breathing a sigh of relief that Milton, at least, is not predicted to move north as Helene did. Are you guys doing okay out there today?
Oh, we're doing fine, except for some fairly bad flooding that went on in the Atlanta metro area. Most of the high winds stayed to our east and went up towards the southern Appalachians. If Helene had gone just a hair farther west, say about 50 miles, Atlanta would have been in the thick of the winds, and Atlanta to Chattanooga would have gotten the destruction that Asheville did, but we didn't. Well, unfortunately for them, but fortunately for us.
Yeah. Well, you guys dodged that particular bullet, it seems, by and large. Guy, on yesterday's Bradcast, we played a clip from Jim Morales, the chief meteorologist at NBC's Miami affiliate station. I don't know if you heard it, but it's been getting a lot of coverage, and I'm hoping that you may be able to offer some insight here to sort of help explain this. Let me play the short clip, and then I'll get your thoughts on the other side of it.
It's just an incredible, incredible, incredible hurricane. It has dropped. It has dropped 50 millibars in 10 hours. I apologize. This is just horrific.
That was Jim Morales, the chief meteorologist at NBC Miami, talking about what he saw in Hurricane Milton as it formed up. Guy Walton, as a longtime meteorologist yourself, can you explain, do you have any sense of what was actually happening there as Morales explained the drop in pressure, 50 millibars in 10 hours for Hurricane Milton? Why is that so significant that it would lead Morales to become so emotional there on the air?
Well, I think that on top of this hurricane, he's thinking about hurricanes in the future and how warm the water temperatures are getting around the planet. And it's going to become the norm. And also for Milton, he realizes that it's going to be taking a path that could lead to being the most destructive hurricane dollar-wise in the U.S. And I believe the most destructive was Katrina at $125 billion.
That's a big, because I don't know weather well enough to understand 50 millibars in 10 hours, a drop in pressure. That's unusual. That's extreme.
It's extreme. It's very unusual as far as past history goes. Yes.
Now, Morales, of course, is not the only one. I follow quite a few climate and weather folks like yourself, and they all seem to really be worried about Milton. You know, like this one could be really bad. You quoted a bunch of very worried meteorologists in your latest piece at guyonclimate.com today. So is that your take as well? And what exactly do you fear might make Milton so much worse than previous storms, even the horrific Helene, which caused at least 230 deaths so far just over a week ago?
Well, this particular system, Milton, is going to bisect Florida in one of the most heavily populated areas from Tampa to Orlando. And we haven't seen a storm like this go right through Tampa since 1921. I think everybody's heeding but most people are heeding the call, getting out of harm's way. So it's not, the death toll is not going to be, I don't think, over 1,000 people like we saw with Katrina, at least, God forbid. But the destruction of this thing is going to be awful. The only good news I have today is that it looks like Milton may come just a hair south of Tampa Bay itself, which would actually minimize damage there. But we still don't know if there's still a chance that it may come just a little north of the bay. And if that happened, then it would be the most destructive hurricane we've seen across the U.S. In a very, very long time, if not ever.
I understand the timing of all of this is also important in regard to tide and so forth. Can you help me understand why Tampa is just so uniquely vulnerable to a direct hit? And this is, you know, well above my pay grade, but what difference does the time of day help to determine as far as a direct hit on how bad a direct hit on Tampa would be, or any other parts of the west coast of Florida? How does timing make a difference in when it comes ashore?
Well, yes, if a hurricane's coming in at high tide, it just adds that many more feet to the storm surge. And if you're looking at 10 to 15 feet as forecast by the Hurricane Center in Tampa, if the hurricane were to come into the bay or just a little north of the bay, then the high tide, if it came in at high tide, which is at 6:11 a.m. on Thursday, then it would add about 3 feet, 3.02 feet to the storm surge.
So when they they predict a storm surge of 10 feet, that does not include the height of the tide, depending on when it may hit. So if it hits at high tide, instead of a 10-foot storm surge, it's now a 13-foot storm surge?
Yes, but I do believe that the Hurricane Center does calculate tide in with their projections. So I think they do that. But the later it comes in, I think it's going to be Wednesday night. The later it comes in, the closer it's going to get to that 6:11 a.m. high tide. There's a low tide at 2:57 p.m. on Wednesday, but it's very minuscule. The tide's very minuscule compared to the real swell coming in from this hurricane.
Why are we seeing, Guy, so much rapid intensification of these storms? I think that's a phrase that a lot of people have been learning in recent months. Why are we seeing so much of that of late? And not just in the Gulf, but really around the world, including off the Pacific West Coast just 2 weeks ago with Hurricane John that spun up, you know, very quickly before it slammed into Mexico's West Coast. Why is that happening, and why is rapid intensification of storms like this a concern?
Well, it's pretty simple. The more heat you put into a system, which is the water, then the more energy or stored potential energy you have. And therefore, when you go to being transferred to kinetic energy, then you're going to get more rapid intensification of these systems.
And
that's the best I can put it.
And is that a danger mostly because it gives us less heads up, basically, about these storms, that they spin up quickly? Or does the rapid intensification make them worse, more dangerous, larger storms, et cetera?
Yes, indeed. Faster developing storms that gives people less chance to prepare, larger storms. So it's going to be a challenge, and closer to the shore, too.
And here's a softball for you, Guy. Why are the waters so warm in the Gulf and everywhere else that we're seeing this rapid intensification?
Yes, anthropogenic global warming.
What? What?
It's all our fault.
Yeah. Kind of. And it was actually interesting because Jim Morales, that was the next thing he said after he sort of broke up in tears. He said, and of course, you all know why this is happening. This is happening because the climate is changing, global warming. And I thought to myself, well, you know what? There's a few people who, live down in Florida, down in the Miami area, who don't know why this is happening, or pretend that they don't know why it's happening, pretend that it has nothing to do with climate change. Rick Scott comes to mind, U.S. senator who's running for re-election, who says, yeah, something's clearly changing, but we don't know why. Well, I think we do know why. The question is, you know, doing something about it might mean he'd have to go against his fossil fuel industry funders in his next election, which, by the way, is less than a month from today, if you're listening down there in Florida. Guy, just over 2 weeks ago now, as Helene was just beginning to spin up, Hurricane Helene, that's the previous one that we went through, it was just beginning to spin up in the Caribbean, and Hurricane John was slamming the west coast of Mexico. I had some concern, as sort of a wannabe amateur meteorologist, that John might move over the Mexican peninsula into the Gulf of Mexico, and that we might then have two storms, both John and Helene, in the Gulf at the same time, maybe even merging. I don't know if that's a thing, but Is Milton, which formed in the west part of the Gulf of Mexico, is that a remnant of Hurricane John, or is it a completely new storm? And if so, how unusual is it for a storm to form in the western part of the Gulf? Don't they usually sort of form more out in the Atlantic and then move into the Caribbean and then into the Gulf from there?
Well, it's not unusual for a system to form in the Bay of Campeche. But anyway, as far as Hurricane John goes, I was about to give you a note saying that, that's not meteorologically going to happen. And Milton formed from disturbance that came through the Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico from the east side and kind of festered in the Bay of Campeche for days before it took off.
So it's not other than the timing, it's not particularly because for years we've seen these storms moving in, you know, coming past Bermuda, the Caribbean, and so forth before they move in. So that's not wildly unusual for a storm to actually form in the Gulf and move east towards Florida.
Well, this particular track is unusual. Mm-hmm. There's not much precedent for that. Now, the 1921 storm came through the Bay of Campeche between Yucatan. It was the Yucatan Channel, rather. There we go, guy. Mm-hmm. And it came through the channel and then went right up towards Tampa. This one is coming directly from the Bay of Campeche and then into the Tampa area.
The 1921 storm, of course, is the one you refer to, is the last one that was a direct hit on Tampa.
That's right. Tampa's been very, very lucky. So you've had over 100 years for rickety infrastructure to be in place that could be demolished.
Now, unlike Hurricane Helene, this storm is not predicted to head north up into the U.S. southeast as a tropical storm, but instead it's going to move across Florida, across the peninsula, as a hurricane and back out into the Atlantic, as I understand it. Is that still the latest prediction? And by the way, Guy, depending on how far south it hits, sure looks to me like Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago could be on the path of this particular storm on the way across Florida and back out to sea. Am I right about that?
Well, Mar-a-Lago looks like it's a little too far south for this one, although they could see some heavy thunderstorms and some flooding rain down that way towards Miami and Palm Beach. But the main thing here to emphasize is that the thing will be moving so fast, even if it does move south of Tampa, the Tampa up through Orlando area is going to get a lot of damage. But the farther north, like I say, it moves a little bit north of Tampa, then Orlando is really in the crosshairs of this. So,
as I and of course, a fast moving storm in this case is actually kind of good news, right? In that it doesn't hang out, drop a lot of rain, as we've seen in a lot of the storms that have hit Texas, Houston, and so forth lately. That if it moves fast, it doesn't drop as much rain. Am I right about that?
You're right about that, but unfortunately, because of global warming, the amount of precipitable water or the amount of water vapor that these things can interact with is increasing. And I did see a note that the amount of precipitable water in association with Milton is going to be near a record high across central Florida as it moves across. So you could be looking at no more than 6 hours as it's moving across, 6 to 9 hours, and in one spot it could be dumping 12 to 15 inches of rain.
Man,
that caused some massive flooding. Particularly, you might not get the highest winds to the north of the system, but it looks like the highest rainfall will be to the north. So, heavy winds to the right side of the system, flooding rain to the north.
Guy, as I referenced during the intro, Donald Trump's Project 2025 manifesto calls for essentially the privatization of the National Weather Service, the fruits and predictions of which Americans now enjoy for free. How would the privatization of NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Agency, the National Hurricane Center, et cetera, how would that affect your work as a meteorologist and that of other meteorologists around both the nation and the world?
Well, that would be devastating. And by the way, you may not know this, but Helene, when it moved up to Asheville, also affected the National Center for Environmental Information.
Yes.
And they have been offline for the last 10 days or so, or after Helene came in.
Right.
So I knocked out that way. And of course, Project 2025 would do the rest if Trump got reelected. But what I'm hoping is that this will be our October surprise. It could be beneficial for the Democrats, unfortunately, a bad situation. If after Milton does what it's going to do, and after Milton and Helene, which are both going to be attributed to being so bad because of global warming or climate change, then I'm hoping that Democrats really pounce on the destruction and on this, and then really point a finger at just about every Republican for political gain. I just hope that happens.
Well, you say it will be attributed to climate change. We will see. As you know, your Marjorie Taylor Greene, I say your because she represents Georgia, is out there saying, oh, it's they can control the weather. They are controlling this October surprise. So we'll see how much of it actually gets attributed to climate change. I hope it is, frankly, I hope it is not so bad that it does become front and center, but I suspect it might the way it's going right now. Legendary climate journalist and advocate Bill McKibben tweeted yesterday, quote, prediction after Helene and Milton, this is going to be in no small part a climate election. He notes Harris Walls is not perfect on this issue, but they are 100 times better than Trump Vance. He adds vote for survival, solidarity, and solar. Guy Walton, I suspect you share his thoughts there.
Yes, I definitely do. And it looks to me like Milton is going to become this decade's Katrina in as far as. And then you can mind that with what Helene's already done, then you're looking at billions and billions and billions of dollars that the federal government's going to have to spend just to get folks situated.
Well, at least there is a federal government willing at this point to do that with FEMA. I note also in Project 2025 that they also would like to privatize FEMA and send the costs for that and for disaster recovery 100% back to the states. God help us all. Guy Walton is a 30-year Weather Channel veteran. You can find his work where he tracks climate extremes every day at guyonclimate.com. You can also find him on the site still known as Twitter at ClimateGuyW. And as Christmas is approaching, there are now three books in the World of Thermo series for kids. World of Thermo Thermometer Rising, World of Thermo Carbonated, and World of Thermo Grim Reaping. Enjoyable reads for the holidays, that trilogy. Guy, always great speaking with you, my friend, right. Even if it is in difficult circumstances. Let's try to do it soon, but without such terrible circumstances.
Thank you so much, Brad. And I do have one book coming out for the holidays. Another one, World of Thermo and Therma, which is Thermo's twin sister. Therma and Africa's Great Green Wall. So we'll see how that one plays.
Very cool. Well, congratulations on that as well. Thanks, Guy.
Thanks so much, Brad.
All right, Desi Doyen, I don't know about you, but like I said, I'm really worried about this storm. I really hope I'm wrong about it.
Well, I hope we are all wrong about it, but I'm fearing that it's going to be bad no matter what happens.
Please take care if you are in Florida today. Get out of harm's way if you still can. Speaking of Team Trump's plans, by the way, to shut down the National Weather Service or to privatize it, he's got similar plans for FEMA in his Project 2025 manifesto. Some thoughts on that and why you need to vote all the way down the ballot. Yes, in state and local races this year, because that's also really important. I suspect some folks in North Carolina today still reeling from last week's Hurricane Helene can attest to that fact. I will explain after a quick break, and Desi Doyen's latest very hurricane-y Green News Report is also later this hour. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are listening to the Bradcast.
The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
Maybe. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Bradblog.com's legal contributor, Ernie Canning, follows a group named Lawyers Defending Against Democracy, and he sends me their missives from time to time. They have been breaking down Team Trump's 900-page Project 2025, written by a bunch of Trump associates and former Trump administration officials over at the far-right Heritage Foundation for Donald Trump to execute when and if he becomes president again. Since I mentioned the Project 2025 plan to shut down and privatize the National Weather Service in the previous segment, the lawyers group's note today on the Trump plans for FEMA seem worth sharing as well, because Trump has been lying about FEMA following Hurricane Helene, despite the fact that, as we discussed on yesterday's show with Asheville, North Carolina resident Tom Sullivan, FEMA has been out in force supporting folks in the hardest hit areas following Helene, despite Trump's lies about that. And they are already stationed and ready to deploy in Central Florida, as I understand it, as Milton blows ashore. But as the Lawyers Defending American Democracy notes today, page 135 of Project 2025 reads, quote, "The bloated Department of Homeland Security, or DHS, bureaucracy and budget, along with the wrong priorities, provide real opportunities for a conservative administration to cut billions in spending and limit government's role in Americans' lives. These opportunities include privatizing TSA screening and the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, their national flood insurance program, reforming FEMA emergency spending to shift the majority of preparedness and response costs to states and localities instead of the federal government." Because, sure, you know, states and local governments have plenty of extra money to spend. Why not? And they note removing all unions in the Department for National Security purposes. What removing all unions at DHS has to do with national security purposes, I could not tell you. As Lawyers Defending American Democracy write, this is another of the many breathtaking proposals Project 2025 contains. The authors provide little or no explanation for the changes that they seek. To fix those unexplained problems, they would, among other things, privatize TSA, the agency created after the terrorist attacks on September 11, 2001, that has kept our planes safe from terrorists during the ensuing 23 years. It's not broke, so let's break it. They would privatize a national flood insurance program that now provides insurance at affordable cost to almost 23,000 communities in high-risk flood areas. Sure, privatize that. And they would shift disaster preparation. By the way, the reason why it's not privatized is because the private insurance industry was not serving these high-risk flood areas. You can't afford to get insurance in those areas. The lawyers group notes they would that Project 2025 would shift disaster preparation and response costs from the federal government to states and local communities. One has only to look at the destruction wrought by recent hurricanes in this country to see the devastating impact economic, and others that this proposal could have on American states, cities, and towns. Or perhaps the authors can ignore this wreckage if it meets their stated goal of, quote, removing all unions within DHS in light of the anti-labor theme that pervades Project 2025. Ah, yes, there's the Donald Trump looking out for the forgotten working man again, I guess. But with at least six states that are still struggling to clean up, many still without power and even still looking for survivors from Hurricane Helene, and with Hurricane Milton now bearing down, it was actually this paragraph from the lawyers that caught my eye. They write, "This proposal fundamentally ignores who collectively we are. We are not simply a collection of individuals and entities engaged in a quest for personal profit. We are a nation. We rely on each other. We have differences, to be sure, but ultimately we are prepared, often through the federal system we have created, to help each other in times of need and difficulty. The authors of this proposal ignore this history of success simply to tear down crucial services within the federal government that have been designed to keep this country as safe as possible and to respond to disasters when they do happen. There are a lot of folks relying on the emergency federal assistance from FEMA today, and I suspect that number may grow exponentially in the coming days, unfortunately. And yet, while folks on the right and in the media pretend that, well, we need to know more substance about Kamala Harris's proposal, and she's offered a whole lot of substance, they seem to be ignoring the actual substance that Team Trump is proposing for his presidency, including, yes, plans to privatize federal government functions from everything like the National Weather Service to FEMA. Despite the quickly increasing dangers that are now slamming us thanks to the global warming and climate crisis that these same folks struggled to ignore and or lie about for so many years now. As to leaving things to the states, let them handle it. Well, that can also be a recipe for disaster these days, which I hope you will keep in mind when you vote this year for races all the way down the ballot, above and beyond the presidential race, and even the U.S. and House and state races, but down into the state and local representation that you have, because it matters. As the New York Times' Christopher Flavell underscored after Helene devastated North Carolina last week, he writes, "The amount of rain that Tropical Storm Helene unleashed over North Carolina was so intense, no amount of preparation could have entirely prevented the destruction that ensued. But decisions made by state officials in the years leading up to Helene most likely made some of that damage much worse, according to experts in building standards and disaster resilience. Over the past 15 years, he notes, North Carolina lawmakers have rejected limits on construction on steep slopes, which might have reduced the number of homes lost to landslides. They've blocked a rule requiring homes to be elevated above the height of an expected flood. They weakened protections for wetlands, which increasing the risk of dangerous storm runoff, and slowed the adoption of updated building codes, making it harder for the state to qualify for federal climate resilience grants. You know, the ones that Project 2025 wants to do away with entirely. Those decisions, notes the Times, reflect the influence of North Carolina's home building industry, which has consistently fought rules forcing its members to construct homes to higher, more expensive standards that, according to Kim Wooten, an engineer who serves on the North Carolina Building Code Council, the group that sets home building requirements for the state. Quote, "The Home Builders Association has fought every bill that has come before the General Assembly to try to improve life safety," she said. Many of these lawmakers who are themselves home builders or have received campaign contributions from the industry, They vote for bills that line their pockets and make their home building cheaper, she says. In 2009 and 2010, lawmakers from the state's mountainous western region wanted statewide rules to restrict construction on slopes with a high or moderate risk of landslides. Their legislation failed in the face of pushback from the home building and real estate industries. Efforts to weaken building standards in North Carolina picked up steam after Republicans won control of both houses of the state legislature back in 2010. In 2011, lawmakers proposed a law that limited the ability of local officials to account for sea level rise in their planning. Again, so much for small local government. Let's tell them what they can and cannot do, at least if it helps our political cause. And then 2 years later, lawmakers overhauled the way North Carolina updates its building codes. That change attracted far less attention than the sea level rule, which I think we might have covered on Green News Report at the time.
Oh, yes, we did.
But this, in fact, this updating of the building codes would prove to be more consequential when it came to Helene. Every 3 years, the International Code Council, a nonprofit organization in D.C., issues new model building codes developed by engineers and architects and home builders and local officials. Most states adopt a version of those model codes, which reflect the latest advances in safety and design. And again, they come out every 3 years. But in 2013, the North Carolina legislature, now dominated by Republicans, decided that the state would instead update their codes every 6 years instead of every three. Sure, there may be helpful new codes that help to keep our constituents safe, but let's ignore them for 3 years, shall we? The change proved very important because in 2015, the International Code Council added a requirement that new homes in flood zones be built at least 1 foot above the projected height of a major flood. North Carolina did not adopt that version of the building code until 2019, since they were then only updating the codes every 6 years at that point. And by the way, even then, the state stripped out the new flood prevention standard that was in those new codes. Rather than make elevation mandatory in flood zones around North Carolina, the state decided that the requirement should only apply if local officials chose to adopt it, which is quite a racket because they're preventing local officials from doing what they actually want. And then they blocked the state from issuing mandatory codes, leaving certain things up to the states. A recipe, frankly, for nothing ever getting done, leaving homeowners in danger, raking in the dough in the meantime for the home builders that are giving money to the lawmakers. It's a pretty sweet deal. That decision most likely left more homes exposed to flooding, according to experts cited in Flavelle's reporting. The Republican legislature took other steps as well that may have exacerbated flooding. For example, in 2014, lawmakers passed laws to weaken protection for wetlands, and which can help reduce flood damage by absorbing excess rainfall. 3 years later, the legislature made it easier for developers to pave over green spaces, increasing the risk of flooding caused by heavy rains. Last year, efforts by Republican lawmakers to ease the state's building codes further, well, that erupted into confrontation with Governor Roy Cooper, who is a Democrat. The legislature passed a law that essentially blocked the state from adopting new building codes until, wait for it, 2031. So they used to do it every 3 years, then they moved it to every 6 years. Now they don't want to have new building codes again until 2031 in North Carolina. Cooper vetoed that bill, saying it would wipe out years of work to make homes safer. But Republicans, who have supermajorities in the state legislature, they overrode Governor Cooper's veto. And how much will that cost homeowners today after Helene? I don't know. Hope folks in North Carolina are asking. The new law has made it harder for North Carolina to qualify for FEMA grants to fund climate resilient construction projects, which prioritize states with up-to-date building codes. The governor's office has estimated that North Carolina has lost some $70 million in grants because of the 2023 law. And then, just this past summer, the Republican legislature in North Carolina again passed a series of reforms weakening the state's approach to building standards. The law gave the legislature, rather than the governor, the authority to appoint or approve members of the state's powerful Building Code Council. It removed the requirement that the council include licensed architects. What are we going to do with architects on the council? And it included other changes, like preventing the state from requiring that electric water heaters be located off the ground in order to protect from flooding. Governor Cooper again vetoed that legislation, and yes, you guessed it, Republicans again used their supermajority to override the governor. Now, why is this happening? Here's one reason. The Home Builders Association has contributed some $4.3 million to North Carolina politicians over the past three decades, with Republicans receiving nearly twice as much as Democrats, according to data from Open Secrets, which tracks political spending. And here's where it's really a racket for the home buyers in all of this. They save money when they're building houses and other buildings because of the, you know, easing of the codes. And when they have to rebuild, they make a lot of money again because they failed to, the houses they built failed to stand up to completely predictable disasters. So guess who gets the contracts to rebuild? Quite a racket. No wonder they're willing to spend so much money to buy lawmakers. Hey, let us build cheap homes and let us rebuild them when our cheap, crappy homes fail to stand up to the predictable climate change that we are all now facing. In the aftermath of Hurricane Helene, insurance money and federal recovery funds will fuel a rush of construction into the areas hit by the storm, the New York Times writes. So they get them coming and going, don't they? Pretty sweet.
Indeed. And of course, when it comes to the disasters that these home builders refuse and the Republicans refuse to protect homeowners against, then the U.S. taxpayer gets to come in and pay for that rebuilding.
Yep.
So it's just a money funnel.
But only apparently if they're built to certain standards, at least for the grants in advance. I guess afterwards, you know, all bets are off and the government's going to help out the people who need the help. The federal government will, not the state government. Even though Donald Trump's Project 2025 wants to move all of the disaster funding to these state and local governments. State governments like the one in North Carolina that helped so many of their own constituents get into this mess in the first place by lowering the building codes. So guess what? They ain't got a home no more. Voting is now underway in one form or another in more than half of the states in advance of your last chance to vote on November 5 this year. And while most of the attention goes to the presidential race and the in presidential election years and to the House and Senate, because in fact the entire U.S. House of Representatives is on the ballot and a third of the U.S. Senate is on the ballot and majority control of both chambers of Congress is very much up for grabs this year. But there are races even farther down the ballot, races that matter, such as for state and local legislatures, that often most directly affect Americans. And of course, in North Carolina, when they have the chance to vote statewide in an election that isn't gerrymandered, well, they voted in a Democratic governor. But the legislature is so gerrymandered that it makes it impossible for Democrats to, unless maybe everything changes after what has happened in Helene over the past weekend after people learn about what those Republicans have done to make things worse. So I do hope folks in North Carolina, as they struggle to rebuild, will remember to thank Republicans at the ballot box for all that they have done in the Tar Heel State to make their lives more difficult, more deadly, and yes, more expensive. Green News Report is next on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is serving you. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you. All right, Desi Doyen, the storms continue, unfortunately.
Yes, regrettably.
In our latest Green News Report.
If you choose to stay in one of those evacuation areas, you're going to die.
Florida braces for powerful Hurricane Milton.
It's frankly ridiculous and just plain false.
Donald Trump is lying about the federal response to Hurricane Helene for political gain. Plus, new study finds hurricanes have a hidden death toll many years later.
All of those intriguing stories and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
That was a horrific storm, much worse. And, you know, it's late in the season. You wouldn't think a thing like that could happen.
Actually, by late in the season, he means peak season. This is your Green News Report. I'm gonna soak up the sun. Okay, Desi Doyen, here we go again.
Yes, sadly, here we go. Florida is bracing for another intense storm, the second major storm in just 2 weeks. As we go to air, Hurricane Milton in the Gulf of Mexico rapidly intensified into an extremely dangerous Category 5 storm, fueled by the record hot waters of the Gulf of Mexico caused by man-made global warming, which also rapidly intensified the deadly, wildly destructive Hurricane Helene just over a week ago. Milton will hit Florida's beleaguered west coast on Wednesday, likely in the Tampa Bay region, which hasn't seen a major storm since 1921 and is particularly vulnerable to storm surge. Officials warn that debris still on the streets from Hurricane Helene could become projectiles. Where Milton makes landfall will make the difference between impacts that are extremely destructive versus catastrophic.
A huge difference.
Mandatory evacuations have been ordered, and Tampa Bay Mayor Jane Castor was blunt about holdouts on CNN.
Helene was a wake-up call. This is literally catastrophic. And I can say without any dramatization whatsoever, if you choose to stay in one of those evacuation areas, you're going to die.
And yes, climate scientists see the fingerprint of climate change in both Milton and Helene. Record hot Gulf of Mexico fueling each storm's size, intensity, and rapid intensification. Rising sea levels have also increased the severity of storm surge. And scientists from Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory found that climate change caused over 50% more rainfall during Hurricane Helene because a warmer atmosphere holds more moisture.
The fact that the mayor is sort of downplaying Helene to note how bad Milton can be gives you kind of an idea, because Helene was terrible.
Yes, it was. The Biden-Harris administration has already approved Florida's request for federal assistance for Milton, and FEMA is already on the ground pre-positioning resources. FEMA Administrator Deanne Criswell says the agency is ready for Milton amid its ongoing disaster assistance for victims of Helene. The death toll from Hurricane Helene is now more than 230 people across six states.
Yes, but is Donald Trump pre-positioning his lies about the next hurricane rolling into Florida.
Well, Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump certainly has unleashed a relentless torrent of disinformation for his own political gain, which has been amplified by Fox News and social media.
And is endangering people.
Yes, he's outright lying about the federal hurricane response to Helene. Republican senators and governors of those states have repeatedly debunked the right-wing disinformation and demanded it stop. The editorial board of the Charlotte Observer published a scathing editorial saying, quote, "Shame on Donald Trump for worsening North Carolina's Helene tragedy with political lies." FEMA's Criswell was on ABC News warning that Trump's disinformation campaign and lies are demoralizing first responders and harming the victims of Hurricane Helene.
This dangerous, truly dangerous narrative is creating this fear of trying to register for help. You know, people need resources and we need them to get into the system.
Long term, a new study released late last week suggests that hurricanes that strike the United States can result in thousands of additional deaths in future years. The researchers, publishing in the journal Nature, analyzed 85 years of excess mortality data, finding as many as 11,000 additional deaths after each storm. And the death rates in affected states remain elevated for up to 15 years after a storm makes landfall. The researchers theorize it may be due to the health effects of stress, new pollutants and toxins released into the environment, loss of income, and lasting damage to homes, healthcare systems, economies, and social networks. They also found tax revenue declines after a storm, reducing healthcare and government services.
With two monster storms in the past 2 weeks, you thought you would cheer us up with that story, eh?
You're welcome.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't bear to get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. Saddest possible version of Put on a Happy Face.
Yes, one of these days we'll be able to get back to some good news, I hope.
We'll see. Thank you very much, Desi Doyen, our producer. Thanks to our guest today, Climate Guy, Guy Walton. More information at guyonclimate.com. And thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other, download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. No paywall. Thanks to those of you kind enough to hit a donate button or who go straight to bradblog.com/donate to help us stay on your public airwaves through all the disasters. Drop me email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. On the Facebooks, Mastodons, and sites still known as Twitter, I am The Brad Blog. We'll see you there. Till we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, Florida.